You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Piper Corp, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program from the Ecological Society of America, where I interview scientists who are involved in ecological policy issues. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Tony Genitos, director of the Joint Global Change Research Institute. Dr. Genitos, a member of the ESA Rapid Response Team, has been a prominent voice in climate change research and has worked on many important reports, including the IPCC Special Report on Land Use Change and Forestry and, more recently, the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment. The Joint Global Change Research Institute takes an interdisciplinary approach to assessing the effects of climate change and possible solutions for them. It produces publications, develops models, and holds seminars and workshops. Dr. Genitos, what is the intended audience for these products?
Well, some of them, of course, are for the peer-reviewed scientific literature, so they're for our peers, for the scientific community. Others, though, are for people in decision-making capacities. We interact with senior business executives in the private sector who have to make decisions about energy investments or what the future might hold in terms of limitations on greenhouse gas emissions. We also do a lot of work that's immediately relevant to government private sector decisions or government public sector decisions about greenhouse gases and cost of mitigation, available technologies, the risks of not doing something about greenhouse gases. Increasingly, we're working with resource managers and land management, natural resource management agencies as well.
Taking action on climate change will require some degree of consensus among the public and policymakers, as well as other groups like corporations and the media. Is there any one place where ecologists should be focusing their efforts, or are there certain stakeholders that scientists have yet to engage but should?
I mean, that's really a political question. You know, my feeling is that the scientists have to, really their role in this is to do the best science that they can on questions that are relevant to the decision-making process. That's where all of our collective credibility comes from, is by being as objective as possible and at the same time not being shy about what the implications are of what we study and what we discover, what we find.
And so based on your experience, is there anything that ecologists should keep in mind when they work to incorporate science into decision-making?
I think the most thing is to be absolutely and scrupulously objective about science. And that doesn't mean to obfuscate your results or your interpretations of the science behind sort of a cloud of uncertainty. All science is inherently uncertain, and all of us are inherently skeptics, or we wouldn't be in this business in the first place. It's not a faith-based enterprise, after all. It's an evidence-based enterprise. But to be very clear, as clear about what we know as we are clear about what we don't know. And I think sometimes the pendulum swings very far on the side of, oh, we have to say all the things we don't know. And while we do, we also equally have to say all the things we do know.
So on that note of uncertainty, it's led a lot of people to dismiss climate change as, you know, mere speculation. And so while we're working to develop more precise models, with the information scientists have now, what are some of the more effective ways of communicating uncertainty without diminishing the gravity of the situation?
There are lots of ways. One is to recognize that people deal with all kinds of uncertainty in their private lives, sometimes quite comfortably, sometimes uncomfortably, but there's no question that they have to deal with it. And so this notion that somehow all the scientific questions about climate change or all the policy uncertainty is somehow going to magically evaporate if we just put enough money into research is just silly. I mean, that day is not going to come. So we're always going to be faced with a situation in which we will make decisions about managing the risks of climate change in the face of things that we simply don't know. But people do this all the time. They make decisions about where to go to college, whether to buy insurance, you know, how are they going to educate their children, how are they going to save for retirement, without knowing exactly how those decisions are going to turn out. But we understand that we don't know exactly how those decisions are going to turn out, and so we're comfortable with that. Decisions about environmental policy and about climate change policy in particular have been, I think, saddled with unrealistic expectations. We aren't going to predict everything. And we're going to be making these decisions over and over and over again in an iterative way and hopefully get better at them over time.
You've often spoken of understanding linkages, what you once described as looking for actions that achieve synergies. So, for example, how climate change and biodiversity are intertwined, or how environmental issues are closely tied to many of society's other interests, like the economy. When you communicate your findings, how do you make them both understandable and relevant to the public?
Try to give real-world examples. It's one thing, for example, to talk about the sort of theory and models about abrupt changes and threshold behaviors in ecosystems, and what happens if you cross some environmental threshold and you get very rapid changes in ecosystems. It's another thing to say, look what's happened with pine bark beetles, we didn't anticipate this. Look what's happened with sort of widespread tree mortality in the Southwest due to drought, we didn't anticipate this. These are rapid changes of the sort that one should be concerned about, in part because they're not easily predicted.
A recent poll by the Pew Research Center for People in the Press showed that the percentage of people who consider the environment a top policy priority dropped from 56 to 41% last year, largely because of rising concerns over the economy. Do you find that you ever have to market science, as it were, based on its connection to society's current priorities?
As long as I don't market science. There's all kinds of polling data on how important people think the environment is, or climate change is, or some combination of those. And what's one of the things that's remarkable about those polling data is how consistent they are over the last 20, 25 years. That climate change and the environment ranks sort of somewhere in people's top 20 issues that they worry about. They typically trail issues of the country's financial situation, and particularly now, and then a whole bunch of other issues that people really care very much about, social issues, crime, all sorts of things. But you know, sort of being in the top 15, 20 of issues that people worry about is sort of the highest that an environmental issue ever rises to. And so, you know, when you poll the whole public, it's a lot. You know, you don't have to be the number one thing that people worry about in order to get action on it. This argument that somehow climate change isn't important because it's not the most important issue ever is a straw man.
And so in Washington, the climate discussion is heavily focused on cap-and-trade legislation to the point where it's sort of being regarded as a panacea. What is your opinion about the steps, legislative or otherwise, that would need to occur for us to adequately address climate change? And of those, what should lawmakers prioritize, and what role do you expect science to have in setting those priorities?
Well, one of the challenges is that, I mean, this is sort of a mixture of both speculation about policy and what role might science have. I'm not really going to speculate about policy. There, you know, it's clear we're going to see some kind of legislation. It's very, very difficult legislation to pass. It's quite complicated. It will affect major sectors of the economy. It's just difficult. It took the Clean Air Act about 10 years to pass, and that wasn't as difficult as this one is. And so we're clearly going to see some kind of both administration policy change and legislation. What role will science play? One of the things that I think the science has to begin to do is to begin to articulate pretty clearly what the risks are or the potential consequences are of any particular course of action. If we were able to say, to distinguish, for example, between a world that had 650 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere and a world that had 550 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere, that would be a really important distinction to be able to make. I'm not sure we can currently make such a fine distinction, but it would be important because the costs of achieving those two goals are really quite different. You know, one of the things that I think this underlying science has to do is to give the policy community a sense not only of what's at stake, but what the consequences of alternative actions are. The final thing I think the science really has to do is make it very clear to decision makers that even as they take actions to deal with greenhouse gas emissions, they also have to be thinking about what are we going to do to cope or adapt to changes that we can't avoid. It's quite clear that there will be some.
That was Tony Janitos from the Joint Global Change Research Institute. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us again next time on The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Gatelli. For a link to Dr. Gatelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.